This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Michael Badnarik to the show. He was the Libertarian Party nominee for President of the United States in the 2004 election. He's the author of a few books. One of them is Good to be King, the Foundation of Our Constitutional Freedom. Michael, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm excellent.
It's good to have you coming to us from Austin, Texas. Just want to kind of dive in and talk a little bit about the government and some of this broad kind of macro stuff. What is the legitimate basis of the U.S. government?
Well, the legitimate purpose of the government is to protect our lives, liberty, and private property. Unfortunately, they no longer do that. And that's primarily because Americans themselves have little or no clue what is in the Constitution. I've given several presentations, and one of the first questions I would ask is to please raise your hand if you are a good patriotic American. And not surprisingly, the entire audience raises its hand. Everybody considers themselves a good patriotic American. When I ask them to raise their hand if they can tell me how many articles are in the Constitution, if I have somebody from my class, my Constitution class in the audience, they will raise their hand, but they're kind of like, conspirators in the question. Ultimately, if you've never read the Constitution, you don't understand it, assuming the government is doing something unconstitutional, you'd never know. You'd have nothing to compare it to.
It's interesting. I mean, is this the result of the public education system, or is it the result of people just being too comfortable? Luxury and, is the call to complacency and apathy. Is it too easy to get by anymore? I often ponder that question,
Oh, absolutely. It's a combination of both of those. The school system was overtaken by the government back in 1953, a year before I was born, with the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. That department has since been split up into separate departments, but the government has been in charge of our schools for, over half a century. And when I was growing up, American students were number one in math and science. People were from other countries were sending their children here to the United States to get a good education. Now, American students would be lucky to be 30th in math or science. We're practically not even in the playing field. We're not second string or third string. We're grade school kids learning how to play the game. There is a television program called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? And I find it impossible to watch that program because the answer is, no, so many times. It is amazing what people fail to know.
It really is. Tell us a little bit about running for president. How far did you get? And why is it that we have this sort of binary two-party system? Other countries have lots of parties. Why do we just really have two? It's either Democrat or Republican, and everything else is way, way, way down the list.
Well, running for office is difficult. Running for president of the United States is not something for the faint of heart. I am literally surprised that I physically survived it. Your life is no longer your own. I was doing 12 to 16 interviews a day and getting an average of 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. You become a piece of furniture. They, move you from place to place like a suitcase. And much like a dog and pony show, it's your job to look good in front of the camera and answer all the questions. And people would come up to me and they were so impressed. Oh, Michael, I don't know how you can answer those questions. Well, there are only 7 questions, and they ask the same 7 questions over and over again. You know, at the end of 2 weeks, I was dreaming up new ways to answer the same question just to entertain myself.
What are the 7 questions, by the way? Or is it just, are you saying that generally? Like, you know, they always ask the same basic questions that you'd answer in a stump speech.
Well, the only question that I didn't like was, you know, Michael, you're never going to win. So who are you going to vote for? You know, Bush or John Kerry? And I told him that the question really insulted me. I told him that I could not vote for the Democrats or the Republicans because they were both, you know, criminal. And I said, I'm running for president because I can't vote for the Democrats or Republicans and respect myself in the morning.
Yeah, interesting. Is it like that, though, with the higher levels? I mean, as a Libertarian Party candidate, you know, you're way down the totem pole. You can't even get into the debates, you know. It's discrimination, frankly. I mean, it's ideological discrimination. Is it like that for the Democrat and Republican, though? Are they just catered to? I mean, they've got such huge campaign budgets and, you know, private jets and tour buses. And by the way, how much money did you raise?
For my presidential campaign, I raised $1,008,000, which is not too bad, but
overall, compared to the other two, you know, that's nothing, right? I mean, that's just
right. That's nothing. But we did some polling immediately after I was nominated and just before the election, and asking the same question, are you familiar with the Libertarian Party? And we went from 25% in May after the convention to 75% just before the election. So 50% of the people in the United States learned about the Libertarian Party based on my presidential campaign. And so that's like 150 million people that we advertised to for simply $1 million. That's a lot of bang for your buck.
That's a good deal, yeah. Do you think it changed any votes, though?
I don't know, because the voting system is so corrupt. Anybody who thinks that, you know, when they go to the polls and they cast their vote on an electronic machine, if they think that that's actually determining the fate of the United States, they're ready to buy, you know, oceanfront property in Arizona. Diebold machines have been demonstrated time and time again to be corruptible. And the software is proprietary, so you're not allowed to look at it. I've been a computer programmer all my life, and if you allow me to write the software and keep it proprietary, I will tell you who's going to win by what margin before the polls even open. You know, what would you like the answer to be? So as long as we're voting on electronic machines, you'll never know what the people really want. And people say, well, Michael, I want to get the results, you know, quickly. And I said, I don't care if I have to wait for the results. I just want accurate results. And so I was running against David Cobb, who was running for the Green Party. David and I are good friends. We debated each other mostly for the purpose of gaining media coverage. You know, I can stand up all by myself, but the media is not going to care. But if I'm in a debate with another presidential candidate, then it generates a little bit of interest. And so David and I worked together to get each other coverage by the mainstream media. But very few people know that David and I enlisted the help of a pro bono lawyer in Ohio, and we proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was election fraud. And if I understand correctly, there were 2 county clerks and a secretary of state in Ohio that went to jail for election fraud.
Can you be more specific about that? You know, I've heard that. I've done some shows on it, actually, but I don't really know what the specific is. Like, are you saying that Diebold has an agenda? Like, are they liberal? Or are they, you know, tech is generally very liberal, obviously. But, you know, what fraud was there and how did anybody find out?
Well, districts are subdivided into precincts. And whenever you tally up the voting, the smallest granularity are the precinct votes, which are usually just above or below 1,000. And so there were several precincts in Ohio where David Cobb, the Green Party candidate, was reported to get zero votes, not a single vote. And yet he had a number of people willing to sign affidavits, like 25 or 30 people who was signing affidavits swearing that they voted for David Cobb in that precinct. Now, David and I were not naive enough to think that we were going to, you know, change the outcome of the election. You know, neither one of us was packing our bags to go to Washington. However, if 25 people have voted for a particular candidate and it doesn't show up on the record at all, then obviously there's been a mistake. And, you know, it's difficult to prove intent. But if your job is to get an accurate count of the people and you didn't do that, whether it's intentional or not, you failed to do your job.
Wow, that is, I mean, how can this stand? That doesn't seem like a partisan issue to me. That just seems like a huge concern for the country. Or do we go as far as, just I'll give you a little more to chew on for that answer, okay? Do we go as far as who's really controlling the country, right? You know, do we go that far, or do we go that just the election is rigged? And if so, what's the agenda? Like, who's rigging? You know, like, I mean, I just don't know where to go with that. It's such a big question in this scary, scary scenario.
And people don't like to ask the question because they are genuinely terrified of the answer. One of my favorite movies, and probably yours, is V for Vendetta. And in
that,
the movie,
that one's pretty good, I agree.
In the movie, the police chief, I think was his title, is trying to track down this V for Vendetta character, and he's been doing some computer research. And at one point, he calls his partner into the office and locks the door. And he starts showing him news reports of all these tragedies, you know, 1,500 people killed by gas, there's an explosion here, and all these different tragedies. And the conclusion was, if you discovered that your government was responsible for all of these tragedies, would you really want to know?
Interesting question.
And that's the same question that I posed to 310 million Americans. You know, everybody keeps asking the question, how did we get here? How bad is it? Well, the answer to that is we, the people, collectively, are asleep at the wheel. We don't know the Constitution. We don't know the principles upon which this government was founded. We don't know the reality of freedom. And we just kind of go along. We just keep voting for our team, Democrats and Republicans, as if it's a Super Bowl game. And you go, oh, well, you know, 4 years, we'll vote again. Really? That's your dedication to liberty. Once every 4 years, you're going to spend an hour and go down and punch a couple buttons on a machine. If the Founding Fathers were alive right now, they'd be going, what the hell is wrong with you? How come you're not shooting these people?
Well, you know, hopefully everybody listening has seen the movie Idiocracy, and I think, sadly, that's the time in which we're living.
Yeah, it's very sad, but I think when I was growing up, my mother used to ask a rhetorical question, you know, how do you feel about ignorance and apathy? And then she would respond a few seconds later, answering the question herself, and the answer is, I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah. You know, is there any chance for a third party? Is there any chance for the current administration? I mean, you know, I assume you're not a fan of anybody that's been in office, or maybe not even anybody running. I mean, kind of just what's your take on the, you know, the current state of
when
affairs?
When I was running for president, I had a young college student driving me from convention to convention, and he was a math major. And he was explaining to me the value of approval voting. And basically in all of our elections, you get to pick one guy. You got the choice of Democrats and Republicans. You get to pick one. It's the same as arsenic or strychnine. Which do you prefer? And it's like, I don't know, which one's cheaper?
This choice doesn't work either way.
Yeah, it doesn't work either way. And he would tell me over and over again why mathematically, if you're only allowed to select one, the end result is that you only really have two choices. And he demonstrated that to me over and over again. Approval voting means that you approve of. In other words, it wouldn't make you throw up if this person got elected. And so if there are five or six names in the ballot, you can go, okay, I like this guy, I like this guy, I like this woman, and the other three people, not so much. And so what you do is you increase the number of votes, but you eliminate the wasted vote mythology. I had people going, Michael, you're a great guy, you're a good candidate, but I can't vote for you because you can't win. And they explained that, you know, if it looked like I was able to win, then they would vote for me. And I go, well, how about this? You promised to vote for me, and I promised to get all of the votes except one to get me elected. You know, this is not a horse race.
Yeah.
We're not betting on who is the most likely to win. When you're going to cast a vote for somebody to defend your life, liberty, and property, you really ought to be voting for the person you think would actually do that.
Yeah. You know what's amazing to me? Why can't we have simple runoff-style elections? Why can't we start with 30 candidates and just whittle them down the funnel? I mean, why aren't we voting online? Now, I know what you said about electronic voting and so forth, but, you know, there's got to be a way that, granted, they'd say, well, we can't have these runoff-style elections because it'd just be too cumbersome. You know, we'd have to come one day, then come, you know, a week later and come again and come, you know, that might not work in the sort of old-fashioned style voting booth concept, but it would certainly work online.
Well, it's a fallacy that they want you to believe in, but it is undoubtedly untrue. There was a comedian years ago who used to talk about his babysitter would tell him that there were snakes around the crib, and that when the child believed that there were snakes around the crib, they wouldn't get out of the crib. And the, you know, people who want to maintain absolute control of the government by maintaining absolute control over the appearance of elections, then they're going to tell you, oh my gosh, this would be too troublesome. We have to keep the status quo because, you know, everything else would be impossible. Well, no, not really. Again, it's the American public that fails to understand what this is all really about. I mean, we the people can flex our political muscle. There are so many of us. If we really were serious, you know, we could, you know, have a rally. Shortly after the Tea Party became a reality, the Tea Party organized a rally in Washington, D.C., and if reports were true, because I wasn't there, we had in the neighborhood of 2 million people in Washington, D.C. Now, they weren't carrying guns, but they didn't have to. The people in Congress were shaking in their shoes. And so if we, the people, said, okay, enough of this BS, from now on, we are going to have, you know, hand-counted paper ballots, end of story. I'm not saying that would eliminate election fraud completely, but it would make perpetrating election fraud a whole lot more difficult.
So when you talk about election fraud, and you gave an example of how you know it's happening, do you have an opinion or any evidence, even better, as to which way that fraud is going?
No, it's a rhetorical question, because it doesn't matter whether you elect a Democrat or a Republican. there is no real difference. Now they will get up.
That's the next thing. I was actually going to ask you about that next, so I'm glad you segued right into it.
It's like WWF wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fake show.
They know who is going to win before they step into the ring. It's all entertainment.
It doesn't matter. If they know who's going to win, it doesn't matter who wins that much, right? It's essentially the same overriding agenda. I mean, you could say the Republicans will say, well, the damn Democrats spend too much. But the Republicans spend too much. I mean, you know, the Republicans have become the party of big government, too. Like, if you rewind 40, 50 years, the Republicans of today are certainly quite liberal in the spending sense and the big government sense. See, spending and the size of government go together. And it amazes me, Michael, it amazes me how people just, especially on the left side of the aisle, they just don't get it. Look, at any human organization is going to have waste, inefficiency, corruption. It's just going to happen. So I say the only solution is just make it smaller, because the amount of waste, inefficiency, and corruption will just shrink with the overall size of government. If government wasn't corrupt to the core, then there wouldn't be all these people that are, you know, lobbying government with all this money thrown at it. It's absurd. It's just absurd. The amount of money coming, like Washington, D.C. is the handout capital of the world. It's mind-boggling what's going on. It's just beyond the beyond.
I agree. And again, it's because Americans don't understand the principles that our country was founded on. They have no clue what is actually in the Constitution. And they keep asking for things that no serious patriot would be caught dead asking for. The whole cash for clunkers, I mean, by definition, that's a communist-style thing.
Well, and Obama money. For 8 years pushed his stupid proletariat car on everybody. And, I mean, it's just pathetic. It's just, don't even get me started. I mean, it is so scary. I guess the question is, what do we do? You know, because it comes from both sides of the aisle. You can make it a little better by not voting for the left, but... It's the same thing. You have the voters voting themselves the public treasury. Whenever you get that, when you get to the 50%-ish mark, it's just over. I don't see how you can ever go back. You know, you have to have a true secession movement or a revolution. Nothing will ever get smaller because we got iron triangles everywhere we look. The whole concept that there should even be, you know, 20% of the economy, 20%+ should be government employees, and the idea that there should be a such thing as a public employee union when government is the arbiter of fairness is insane on its face. These people are just ripping off the taxpayers. That's all they're doing. All of these self-interested people everywhere you look are just destroying the country. What do you do?
You've identified the problem. Yeah. Now come up with a solution.
Well, that's my question for you. We can wrap it up with this. What do we do? What action steps can people listening, what action steps can they take? Because I just don't see how you can get back from a point where 47% of the population is getting, you know, handouts. How do you go back? How do you go the other way?
You're not going to like my answer. And I can't answer completely because then the government would be sending people to my door. Let me just summarize by saying there is no peaceful option remaining. You know, when you are...
That is sad, yeah.
When you are that pregnant, trust me, there's going to be some childbirth pains. You go, well, I don't want to do this. Well, you should have thought about that 9 months ago because, you know, the baby is on its way.
Yeah. Wow. That's something. So secession. I mean, I think we were off air when we talked about this. You said you would run for president of the Republic of Texas. I love it. If a state really, I mean, there's a couple of states, Texas certainly a likely candidate, that could be likely secession candidates at some point, right? If that happened, I mean, the feds wouldn't sit by and let that happen. They'd be rolling tanks and flying fighter jets in there, right? It would be.
Let me reject that.
Yeah.
That's the argument that always comes up. Oh, we can't do that because the government won't let us.
Yeah. The federal government won't let us. Yeah.
That is a defeatist attitude because you don't want to get up off the couch and suffer any pain.
Yeah.
But we've already done secession. What do you think the Declaration of Independence is all about?
Yeah, but here's the difference.
We seceded from England, which at the time had the largest army and the largest navy in the world.
Fair enough. However, this is the weapons technology of today. It's just a non-starter. I mean...
Not true.
No? Okay. Tell us more.
Not true.
Tell us more. Give us some detail about the not true.
Afghanistan is a perfect example.
Okay.
Russia went in there. Russia is, the huge bear. And I don't know how many years they were there, but they finally gave up. And they were fighting against people living in tents. And they didn't have, major armament. They just basically had small rifles and stuff. But when you are defending your home, it is amazing how tenacious you can be. I come from Texas, and to us, the Alamo is not just a monument to go and visit. To us, the Alamo is a shrine. And, when you go there, I mean, it's almost like stepping into church. So these men knew what was likely to happen, and they stayed anyway. They stayed because they were defending a principle. And it was the principle that we have a right to own land, and we have a right to live our lives without government interference.
I just can't imagine any decent-sized segment of the population nowadays saying, give me liberty or give me death.
That's the problem. Yeah, yeah. The problem is not armament. The problem is not what kind of guns do we have. The problem is whether or not the American public has the cojones to stand up and do it. And the answer, sadly, is no. When I teach my Constitution class, I talk about a credible threat. And I go, well, what is a credible threat? And I give the metaphor that mom and dad are going to go to the mall. And dad, being a nice guy, decides to drop mom and the baby off at the door while dad goes to park the car. While mom is in the store, the baby is, a two-year-old, is running around, tearing up the flowers, just making a nuisance of himself. And mom is going, don't do that. I'm going to give you a spanking. If you do that, don't do that. Well, I mean, within, two or three minutes, the two-year-old and everybody in the mall knows that mom is not going to do anything. She's going to talk about a spanking, but it's never going to happen. So a credible threat requires two things. One, it requires the physical ability to inflict pain, and second, it requires the emotional willingness to inflict that pain. So now they're waiting for dad. Dad comes back from the parking lot, and immediately the two-year-old is sitting there on the bench behaving and, has hands folded. Why? Because daddy never once, not once has daddy ever said, daddy is going to spank you. Daddy just hauls off and does it. And so mom is big enough, but she doesn't have the emotional willingness. She apparently doesn't want to damage the little boy's psyche. Dad has already demonstrated that he's willing to inflict a spanking.
Here's the thing, though, okay? Beyond that metaphor, we've got to look at the control of the communications platforms. And especially scary are, Google and Facebook. I think they're the two scariest companies on earth. In order for people to get motivated and have the will to do something, in order for people to organize to do it, they've got to be able to communicate. And this censorship, I mean, I love that PragerU is suing Google, YouTube, you know, it's the same thing. I see all these examples of people saying their site has been de-indexed. Their YouTube videos have been demonetized. Their site can't participate in the Google ad networks anymore. You know, this whole concept of fake news is a red herring, if you ask me. I mean, granted, there is some fake news, no question. But who gets to decide what's real and what's fake? Some leftist at Google? I mean, God, it's been proven that both of these companies are severely left-wing. They censor. I mean, you know, ex-Facebook employees said they were just wantonly censoring conservative content. And I'm not taking a side here. I'm just saying, you know, it's like a Voltaire said, you know, I may hate what you say or dislike what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. You know, we've moved so far from that idea, it's not even funny. That's the problem. No one can even communicate anymore unless you're falling in line with Big Brother. And oddly, Big Brother is not exactly the government. It's these two major companies and all the media, mainstream media as well, but their force isn't that powerful anymore. I think it's Google and Facebook, you know, that are just in bed with the government. That, I would say, is likely our biggest concern.
Okay.
am I wrong? I mean, tell me.
I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah.
But I've been studying the Constitution for 30 years. I have been teaching it for 20 years. And my biggest problem is that when I offer the class, nobody wants to take it. Nobody cares. I got a phone call earlier this evening, and I don't know who it was. I never got the guy's name, but he just started to rant, telling me how bad it is. I'm going, yeah, I know how bad it is. He goes, well, you got to teach these people. I go, I've been doing it. They're not listening. You know, and he continued to rant, and I finally just said, stop, stop, stop. And when he didn't give me a chance to talk, I just hung up on him. You know, people are frustrated, but they won't do anything. You know, when I was running for president, it's Michael, you should do this. Michael, you should do that. And I said, stop telling me what I should do. You know, get off your butt, do it yourself, and, you know, call me when you've been successful. You know, I'd be able to applaud your efforts for a while.
We need to get these social media platforms and any entity that controls nearly 70% of the search traffic of the world. That needs to be split up. That's an antitrust problem. That's
an antitrust problem. You've identified the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I've been fighting against it for a long time. I don't have any solutions because I'm, you know, a really motivational speaker, and I can get people fired up towards the end of my speech, but then they have a cup of coffee, go home, and they don't care anymore.
Yeah, so, you're absolutely right.
You know, it's like trying to build a fire with wet wood, and it just ain't happening. So I'm worried about me and pretty much nobody else.
Yep. It's just not bad enough, is it?
It's not bad enough, but one thing I can guarantee...
The bread and circuses keep coming, and everybody's relatively content. They're certainly fat, so the old saying, fat and happy, well, you know, certainly the U.S. is a lot fatter. That's a lazy thing, right? So, you know, yeah.
I'm just kind of sitting back and waiting to watch what's happening.
I interviewed the author of Enjoy the Decline on my show, and it's something else. Give out your website, tell people where they can learn more, and hopefully at least get talking about this stuff at the very least.
My website is constitutionpreservation.org. I have two books. One is Good to Be King, which describes the Constitution in detail and helps you understand the principles. My second book is called Secret to Sovereignty, which discusses things that I've done once I've discovered that, you know, you really can't change the way government is working. And both of those are available at constitutionpreservation.org. My personal contact information is there. I will grant everybody a few minutes to rant and complain and tell me, oh my gosh, you know, things are really terrible. Obviously, I know that already. But after that, it's either, okay, so what are you doing to fix it? And if you're waiting for me to deliver liberty to you on a silver platter,
it ain't going to happen.
I'm just going to hang up. I don't have time for that.
Michael, thank you for sharing this stuff, and thanks for being out there. And I just hope we can see people with new ideas that are beyond the silly binary system we have get into office and start getting the message out there. At least get into the mainstream discussions about things, you know.
Yeah. Well, the bad guys control the media and they control the elections. You know, if you think that you're going to restore liberty with an intellectual discussion, stop and think about it. If an intellectual discussion was going to work, it would have worked a long time ago.
Yeah, fair enough. Good statement. Michael, thank you again for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.